Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Robert A. Wilson with Cowboy Wisdom and Ally Radio. Tonight we're going to talk about Western with Western author Doug Hocking, and we're going to talk about the Old West and how he got into writing and how you can learn how to write Western books through his knowledge. And Doug is an independent scholar and author of fiction who has completed advanced studies in history, ethnography, and historical archaeology, and lives and breathes way out west. His principal interest is in New Mexico territory from the Mexican War up through the Civil War. It was an exciting period when the land was new and isolated from the rest of the country, and violence ran at its high mark. Following leads from source to end, he is learning the Santa Fe Trail, the fur trade, the Mexican and Civil Wars, the Apache, the Pentatonitis, I murdered that word, and percussion cap weapons. And Doug found that the way to know history is to learn about the tools people used in the landscape, the trails, the climate, and the economics of the times until the options open to people and begin to make sense. Doug tries to express that both in fiction and history writing can open your mind. And without any further ado, I want to welcome Doug to the show, and welcome, Doug.
Well, hi, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's my honor and privilege. Let's talk about that time in history you're talking about, because I've read a lot of Louis L'Amour books, and I grew up kind of in the West, but New Mexico has kind of got its own history, the New Mexico Territory. It's got its own uniqueness compared to the rest of the world. Enlighten people on some of that, would you?
Well, you know, you've got four cultures interacting there. The mountain men and traders that had come over the Santa Fe Trail, Anglos, the native Mexicans, the Indios Cimarrones, the wild Indians, and you've got the Pueblo Indians that for outsiders are sometimes very hard to tell from the Mexicans. You know, I grew up in northern New Mexico in the Rio Arriba. That means upriver, above Santa Fe. And you find out that, yeah, there's a lot of towns with Mexican names, with Spanish names, but only a few of them are really Mexican towns. The rest are pueblos. And, I mean, Santa Fe, Chimayo, Santa Cruz de la Cañada, and Taos. And even Taos has the Taos Pueblo right there. And that's about it. There are even wilder towns, Abiquiu, Truchas, Trampas. These are the Genizaro towns. The Genizaros were wild Indians that were captured, made slaves in Spanish and Mexican homes, and then given a grant of land and told to go out and defend the boundaries of the colony. So it's, I don't know, New Mexico. Back in the 19th century, you know, we think of Catholic priests. You know how many Catholic priests they had?
I have no clue.
Two. They had before that had Franciscan monks who were sent by the Spanish crown to the Pueblo Indians, and only secondarily handled the Hispanics. In 1830, after the Mexican Revolution, the Franciscans, who were mostly Spaniards, weren't trusted anymore. And Mexican government told them to go home. That left two secular priests for all of New Mexico. So they made up their own religion. They became penitentes. And boy, I grew up in fear of the penitentes. The guys who whip themselves, the guys who crucify a man at Easter. And that was a folk religion that grew up because they didn't have religious leadership. And, you know, into this mix come Anglos, barely understanding any of it. It was a very interesting time.
And yet they all kind of survived in their own way. And Doug, you can go to DougHocking.com. That's DougHocking.com. And you can see Doug's book. But there's one here that really intrigued me, Devil on the Loose. Explain to people how that book come about. Tell them what it's about and what they really... Through fiction books, you get a lot of history. I'm starting to understand that because there's a lot of research goes into these.
Oh, absolutely. And I try to make my background very real. I can tell the truth in some ways in fiction better than I can in writing history. It's just easier to make the story flow. And A Devil on the Loose... has been running for 2 years now as a serial novel in the Tombstone Times. In fact, I've spent most of the day writing another chapter. And the story spreads from Santa Fe all the way down to Arizona in the 1850s, when Arizona consisted of two tiny towns, Tubac and Tucson, 300 miles from the next town. It was a wild, wild time when, well, the court was in Santa Fe and was supposed to come once a year to Mesilla on the Rio Grande. That was 300 miles away. If you got a bad man you want to bring to justice, you've got to take all the witnesses and the man on a 600-mile round trip and hope the court's going to be there. It didn't work. So there was no law and order in Arizona. Tucson was a wild place. Guys on the run from vigilantes in California. They had one man up there, a former state representative, who had shot an Irish waiter in Washington, D.C., because he wouldn't serve him breakfast after 11 a.m. in the morning. Just pulled out his gun and shot him and headed for Tucson.
That's funny. If he is alive today, he'd probably be using an AR down there. That's rude.
You know, I talk about some of that in the short story, Marshal of Arizona, which is set in Tubac in 1859. And very loosely follows real events, but it attacks that problem of what do you do when you can't legally have the law.
And keep going.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, the big book right now is the one that's just come out is Massacre at Point of Rocks. And in Massacre at Point of Rocks, I followed the real events of 1849 of the White Wagon Train disaster. James White, a Santa Fe trader, got out ahead of the main caravan because he wanted to rush his wife to Santa Fe. He said, "Hey, we're beyond the Comanche now. I'm going to push ahead with two wagons, get there fast, get my wife and baby girl settled in." And he promptly runs into Hickory Apache. And before you know it, something's gone wrong. The Apache were probably sort of collecting a toll to use the road that crossed their land. Somebody fired a shot, and before you know it, all the men are dead. Anne and the baby girl are taken captive. And the next thing you know, you've got bounty hunters, a government offer of $1,000 in trade goods to the Jicarilla, the army trying to trade hostages, and finally a company of dragoons, a battery of artillery, and a company of New Mexico volunteers head out in search of the Jicarilla. They pick pick up Antoine LaRue as their chief guide. They come to Kit Carson's rancho, and Major Greer tries to recruit Kit to be a scout. And Kit says, but you've got LaRue. You don't need me. Greer says, we need you. Kit says, but I'm at peace with the Jicarilla. They come by. I give them a few livestock. They leave me alone. We're neighbors. The major says, your country needs you. This woman needs you. And Kit can't resist that. So he goes out and he finds a three-week-old trail that has been snowed on, follows it for 200 miles and catches up with the Jicarilla. And I mean, this is all real stuff. And my wife says, I can't tell any more than that. You have to buy the book to find out.
Well, that's when you can go to DougHawking.com and read The Massacre of Pointed Rock. They can get that on Amazon. And where can they get your books, Doug?
Well, they can get the book on DougHawking.com. They can get them on Amazon. And they can also, if they're into ebooks, go to SmashWords.com. Really great site where books on Amazon tend to be about $12.99. On Smashwords, the average is between $3.99 and $4.99. And Smashwords treats authors right. I'm pretty happy with them. You can get the book in any format through them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And now I'm also looking. There's a picture with the mystery of Cacho Canyon. That picture,
well,
that's a Pueblo's, that's old Pueblo ruins there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's at Chaco Canyon. And Chaco Canyon is one of the most mysterious places in North America. I kind of did a Dan Brown. I searched up all the strange stories and the mysteries I could find in the Southwest and found out that they rather easily link together and link through Chaco Canyon. Chaco's a marvelous place if you've never been there. It's incredibly remote in northwestern New Mexico, and there's a mystery right away of why people ever went there. There aren't any resources to speak of, but there are huge, you know, 600-room villages, seven of them, and all within 2 or 3 miles of each other. Some of these are within a half a mile of each other. And why did they leave? You know, why did they come? Why did they leave? Oh, gosh, they left behind so many mysteries. if you're into archaeology, you know about Chaco.
I'm not so much into archaeology as I am seeing the country without a highway. But anyway, that's where the real world is. But I just am on your website here, and under the caption books, you go down there and read the recipe. Summer squash, I can't pronounce the name, Donna Loco Calabasas. I murdered that word, but
Calabasita.
Doña
Loca's Calabacitas. Doña Loca is a recurring character in a number of the books. It translates roughly Madam Madcap. She's based on a real friend of mine who's been through five husbands, two of whom were murdered, and she was a suspect both times.
But anyway, the recipes you have here, I'm looking at the Donald Locos. Now, are these recipes something you speak in your book?
Yes. We found that my wife, in helping me proofread, she'd get hungry because I described the meals that they were eating. And she'd get hungry and have to go make a Mexican meal. She says, so you have to include the recipes to link to the book.
Well, there's some things on here that's making me hungry. I see why she gets hungry.
Oh, there's some great recipes. And we'll post some more before long.
But if they go, you know, if somebody was going to write a fiction book, you really have to know, it's really a fictional character with a lot of history of really the places where the people were when the events happened. Is that pretty much point on, Doug?
Yeah, you really have to know where the trails were and why they were there, what the obstacles were to movement, what tools they were using, what the economics was. You know, you hear about the Santa Fe Trail and it made everybody rich. And then you read about the Rio Arriba and you discover that everybody was dirt poor. So how are guys in Missouri getting rich off trade with Santa Fe? Well, the truth is that Santa Fe was the back door to Mexico. Mexico had incredibly high tariffs. They wanted all the industry to be down around Mexico City, and everybody in the outlands was going to provide them with raw materials. Weren't allowed to have tools. So New Mexico doesn't even have a sawmill when the Americans arrive. Now, people are sitting on bancos, adobe blocks, instead of chairs, because they don't have the means really to make the chairs. So what happens is they sneak in through Santa Fe and head south to places like Monterey that are wealthy on mining silver and gold. And those folks down there are buying the goods that are coming over, and gold and silver is going back to Missouri. But, you know, so, you pick, go on ahead.
So, you know, is it still that way today? Mexico City is a prosperous place. The outlying areas are always impoverished.
And that remained their policy for a very, very long time. I couldn't tell you about modern Mexico. I know that in 1846, that New Mexico, California, and Texas were all in revolt from Mexico because of this, and that was why it was so easy for us to separate them from Mexico.
And I'm on DougHocking.com, but I'm looking on your talks and presentation. If somebody really wanted you to come and give a speech on Western, on the Santa Fe Trail and stuff, they can go to your website and you go and do talks and presentations. Am I reading that right?
That's absolutely right. And we can work out, you know, terms. If you want to pay my travel expenses, I'm pretty reasonable.
And you know, here, go ahead, Doug.
No, I mean, I've been appearing all over the local area, Tubac, at the Presidio Park there. Boot Hill, I'll be at Boot Hill if anyone wants to meet me. I'll be at Boot Hill and Tombstone on the 25th, out there talking in front and selling books.
You know, if you just put on my Facebook, on my message, you put a deal, and I'll put it on my Twitter account, and I'll do that, because to me, and this is a personal opinion here, we've got away from our Western roots, some of the integrity and some of the just the morals and ethical values that the West put forth. Do you feel that, Doug?
Oh, absolutely. And it's why I wrote Massacre at Point of Rocks. It's why I got started writing. A few years ago, Paul Hutton did an article in Wild West magazine that talked about the White Wagon Train disaster. And the editor noted that both the Kit Carson Home Museum in Taos and the Billy the Kid Museum were in trouble, in financial trouble, and the state was looking at bailing one of them out. And guess which one they bailed out?
The Billy the Kid.
Absolutely.
How's their name?
You know, is that the kind of hero that we want for our sons and daughters? Or do we want real heroes? And, you know, Kit Carson was an incredible guy. He was the solid deal. I've been looking at, you know, Gene Autry's Ten Commandments?
No, I don't.
Well, Gene Autry, when he was doing Singing Cowboy, came up with Ten Commandments for the cowboy. He must not take unfair advantage, must never go back on his word. He must always tell the truth and be gentle with children. Must not advocate or possess racial or religious intolerant views. He must help people in distress. Must be a good worker. Must keep himself clean in thought, speech, and action. Must respect women, parents, and his nation's laws. Must not drink or smoke. Must be a patriot. And, you know, Kit Carson lives up to all of those. And if we start looking at what academics have told us about what it is to be a hero and how heroes approach legendary status, you'll find out that all of these elements are built into that. This is what we're looking for in our Western heroes. And, boy, I really want to revive that. That's why the West is important. Go ahead.
And, you know, the whole country is looking for that today.
We're starved for it. You know, Hollywood keeps trying to feed us villains as heroes. Do you remember Deadwood?
Yeah, Deadwood, South Dakota, yeah.
Yeah, and they did the Deadwood TV show. And, well, they captured a lot of what the Old West looked like. But before they were done, they had us confused. The hero had become a sort of villain, and the villain who has become the good guy who's keeping the town going by murdering people. It's very confused.
Well, we're really a confused country looking for leadership right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We need a real leader. And we need to be proud of our heritage.
And that's true. Tell us a little bit more about Kit Carson and some of the things that the history, and nobody really knows, some little thing about that, because him and John Day and them guys that made the Open the West up, they intrigue me. But tell us something about Kit Carson that nobody would ever think about.
Well, for a long time, he was the agent for the Jicarilla Apache Indians. They called him Argiti. Kit put it on the line a number of times because they were starving, and the government wasn't playing fair with them. When he went out to rescue Ann White, he felt a deep personal commitment, something very few people would. He felt responsible for her. They found a dime novel about him that had been hers in one of the campsites. And he looked at that and just broke down and said, take it away, burn it. If she saw that and knew I lived nearby, she would have expected me to come and rescue her sooner than this. You imagine a man that feels that way? Feels that kind of responsibility to his neighbors?
You know, something that I know, he was that responsible to himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see, And that's something we've really got away from, is respecting ourselves. We think everything should be easy rather than engaged in and expanded to into living. And I'm also on the DougHocking.com website, and I'm on your galleries there. There's a picture, and I can't pronounce that name down there, so I'm not going to even try, but that picture, there's a picture on that, and it says San something. What is that about?
It sounds like you're looking at the Santuario de Chimayo.
That's what I'm looking at.
Okay. That's about 20 miles north of Santa Fe. It's known as the Lourdes of North America. It's a pilgrimage site. At Easter, people come from Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and all over the Rio Arriba, walking all night carrying candles to be there on Easter morning. There is a hole in the ground back behind the altar, and there's white clay in the hole. People dig out the white clay and take it home, put it in their food. It is the cure, and you know, thousands of people believed that they have been cured by going to the Santuario de Chimayo.
You know, the place... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it still goes on today. You can visit there. It's a wonderful place. A special place.
And this is an interesting website. If you ever have some time, DougHocking.com. I'm on the Bisbee Corral. And I'm looking at a lodge, the San Jose Lodge on the Nacho Highway. What's that all about there? Because that's a very pretty picture in the Bisbee Corral of the Westerners. What is that? That's a senior center there.
Yeah, that's where we meet the first Thursday of every month at 7 p.m. The Bisbee Corral of the Westerners is organized under Westerners International out of Oklahoma City. We meet once a month. Have a quick business meeting, and then we have a presentation from someone, scholars, local historians, folks with a story to tell about the Wild West. We try to preserve it. And the guys from Westerners are the ones who've taken me out to any number of places. I don't know what more I can say. It's a great group. If you've got a chapter nearby, a corral or a posse, look them up.
You know, I've learned a lot on this show, but, you know, the West is very intriguing, and especially the desert in New Mexico and Arizona. There's a lot of mysteries, a lot of stuff that we'll never understand. So how does just being down there and getting to write this really open your imagination up down there, Doug?
Well, Cochise County, which is where I'm located, is home to both Bisbee and Tombstone. It's the Southern Immigrant Trail passes through. Something like 50,000 people on their way to California in the 1850s passed through here. You know, I was amazed recently to get out and find the trail and find out that miles and miles of it can still be seen. You can still find the old campsites. You can walk along the trail that was built by the Mormon Battalion under Colonel Philip St. George Cook back during the Mexican-American War.
And we're running out of time here, Doug, so let's give everybody where we can get, they can get your book, and tell us about a new book you're writing.
Okay, Massacre at Point of Rocks is available on my website, DougHocking.com. It's available from Amazon and also from Smashwords, where you can get it in ebook format. I'm working on a book, Battle of Cieneguilla. That'll probably be my next one. That was a battle that Jicarilla fought with the Dragoons in 1854, and it was the Custer's last stand of its day. The Dragoons got it handed to him, and nobody remembers it today because it was so remote, there was no press nearby. So anyway, we're going to bring that to the fore. Kit Carson was involved in the aftermath to that. And it should be interesting. Also, you have asked me a couple of times about Mystery of Chaco Canyon. I took all the mysteries and threw them together sort of a la Dan Brown. And that book needs to be polished a little bit, and then I'll have that out. It's already been written.
And now the one about the Jicarilla, and was Coach East, I got to ask this, Coach East is always kind of, or no, Geronimo and Coach East, they kind of run that whole area too, didn't they?
Well, yeah. Coach East and Geronimo were Chiricahua Apache. You can figure that they were west of the Rio Grande, south of Socorro, New Mexico, down through Cochise County, where I am, the southeast corner of Arizona, and down into Mexico. The Jicarilla Apache were Plains Apache. They're up north of Santa Fe, up through Taos, into southern Colorado, and out onto the plains. They hunted buffalo and lived in teepees. And their chiefs were guys like Chacon, who led them at Cieneguilla, and Lobo Blanco, who was considered responsible for the white wagon train disaster.
Okay, and Doug, we're out of time. And it's DougHocking.com. We're going to have Doug back because we're learning stuff about our history by somebody in today's world that understands it. And it really was exciting, and I really enjoyed this. Doug, give the people some wisdom, some Western wisdom, and I'm going to close out the show.
Oh, gosh. Never put your hammer down on a cartridge. Keep one empty.
And that is some wisdom in a real way. And that's some real wisdom there. Doug, thank you. And I want to thank all the listeners. And Doug, we'll have you back and we'll talk more about this because this was intriguing. And thank you and thank all the listeners.
And thank you.
All right. And good night, everybody. And we'll see you next week. And everybody have a good weekend and enjoy the nice weather. And good night.